seem to be about, sorry, the text today seem to be about, I mean, there's all this, in this text, there's all this stuff about sin and who's a sinner, and I'm trying to identify who's a sin and who can see and who can't see and what blindness is. I was struck in the rereading of our Old Testament text that that's also part of the theme of the Old Testament text. They're trying to choose a king, and they're looking for, you know, through Jesse's sons and Eliab, whoever it comes across, and he's tall and he's good looking, and they're like, oh, surely that must be the guy. And Samuel's like, well, God doesn't see the way humans see. You think he's tall and good looking, and therefore that qualifies him to be a king. But that's not what qualifies you to be a king. But the irony of this story is then they finally get to David, and I mean, all those brothers get rejected, they get to David, and what does David look like? He's ruddy, he's got beautiful eyes, and he's handsome. There's this whole irony, right? And it's God didn't choose him because he was ruddy and had beautiful eyes and was handsome. God chose him because he had a shepherd's heart. That's why God chose him. But from the human perspective, he's like, yeah, he's better looking than his older brother. He's going to make a better king than the other one, right? I think there's a sense of humor in that text. But the point is, God doesn't see the way that humans see. And so there's this focus on blindness in this text. And after the 8 a.m. sermon, two very smart, wise people walked out the door and talked to me about disability theory, which I didn't know anything about. But apparently there are schools of thought when it comes to disability. Because if you think about it, in the course of human history, things happen to our bodies. And sometimes we're born with most things intact, and sometimes people are blind. Sometimes people don't hear. Sometimes people can't talk. Sometimes people are missing limbs for whatever reason, and disability happens. And humans kind of, it's like, and it makes their experience of the world much different than the normative experience of the world. And so humans try to make sense of this. And there's two broad categories of thinking around disability. One has to do with the kind of the moral theories around disability, that if somebody is born with a disabled, something wrong happened. Somebody didn't do something they were supposed to. Maybe they sinned, right? Or maybe they didn't eat the right kind of food or get enough exercise, or maybe mom didn't take care of herself the way she needed to take care of herself during pregnancy, so it's her fault, right? I mean, so there's these schools of thought that generally fall into kind of that moral category, that the disability is there because somebody didn't do what they were supposed to do. And that is the most widespread view of disability, and has been the most widespread view of disability throughout human history. And you see it here in this story. The other view of disability is just largely a social theory, that disability is in many ways more of a human construct than anything else, or at least our response to disability is deeply shaped by our human perceptions, and that sometimes things just happen. Sometimes bodies are just different. Sometimes people are born without eyes, or they can't hear, right? And what makes it a disability is how the humans interact with that. You know, if somebody has a hard time walking, and then you design your society such that there are curbs everywhere and steps everywhere, that's going to make it hard for that individual, but is the disability their fault, or is the fact that you constructed a society that makes it hard for that person to live in? Right? You can look at it one way or the other. Sometimes disabilities just happen to people. In this story falls under the moral category because it's clear, you know, the question that haunts this story is who sinned? Whose fault is it? Is it this guy's fault or is it his parents' fault? And you have to imagine the world from this guy's experience or his parents' experience. I mean, there are lots of characters in this story. This man was born without the ability to see. And he doesn't know that he can't see. You've got to imagine this baby who grows up in the world, and this baby hears, and this baby tastes, and this baby senses things with his skin, and this baby smells. And this baby's capacity for hearing and smell and touch and taste becomes extraordinarily exquisite. Right? All of us have those capacities to taste and hear and do those things, but our sight dominates. I mean, most of us who are normatively abled, right, we rely on our sight more than we do on these other senses. And so this man has an experience of the world that actually is unique and is limited in terms of his ability to see, but maybe richer in other ways, right? But that's not how other people view him. That's not how other people are thinking. Like, wow, he's special. He's got something unique going on. They're like, no, he's blind. He's limited. He can't do things. And so already there's this presumption that's put upon him as he's growing up and developing, and there's these limitations that are put upon him. And it's like, oh, you know, he's not good for anything because he can't really work. So all he can do is beg. So, you know, he's going to spend his days at the gate or outside the temple begging, and that's his existence. And that's the human construct. Like, they could have imagined, are there ways that we can use his senses and his skills in creative ways, right? Anyway, so you have to imagine this, put yourself in the shoes of this man, because everybody else around him sees his blindness as a moral, or they're questioning, is it a moral failing? Did you sin? What did you do? What did you do in your mother's womb that caused God to blind you? How awful must you have been in your mother's womb, right, that God caused this blindness, right, to happen to you, which is, you know, I mean, there were rabbis back in the day that were speculating about this. You know, well, what was that baby doing in the womb anyway that caused him to sin? Or maybe it wasn't his fault. Maybe it was his parents' fault. Maybe his parents did something. You got to imagine those poor parents who, their baby, they love their baby. They're excited to see their baby. And you've got to imagine what happens for them internally is they discover that, oh, their baby can't see. And their heartache with that for their own child. But also the sense of, for themselves, is this my fault? It doesn't help. I mean, that's just a natural parent's reaction. It doesn't help that the society around them is reinforcing that. And they're like, yeah, it's your fault. You did something. You didn't eat the right food. You didn't do enough exercise. Maybe you shouldn't have said that thing to your neighbor. God's punishing you. And so you have this family that's grown up in a context where they have to bear the burden of this social stigma and this moral judgment that's placed upon them. And that's just a human thing. That exists in humanity. And through all human societies, this is just a human thing that's happened. And then you've got the neighbors in this story who grow up with this child, and they're aware, yep, he's the blind kid. He's not like our kids. You know, thank God he's not like our kids. He's the blind kid. And what did that family do such that God is punishing them? Right? So the neighbors are also complicit in this whole thing. So there's this whole social structure that exists in the context of this story. Jesus, we're in chapter 9 for this story. In chapter 8, 7 and 8, Jesus has been in the temple, and he gets into a theological argument with everybody in the temple around Abraham and what does it mean to be a child of Abraham. And they get so upset that they're picking up stones and they're about to throw stones at Jesus, and he walks out of the temple. So that has just happened. Jesus just walked out of the temple as everybody is about to throw stones at him. And what does he do? He walks along and he sees this man who's sitting there on the side of the road. And the point of the story is that God sees in a way that humans don't see. That God understands in a way that humans don't understand. And so Jesus sees this man. And the disciples see Jesus seeing this man. The disciples are there looking at Jesus, looking at this man, and they see that he's blind. And they're men of their culture. They're men of their historical period, right? And what do? They're like, oh, I wonder, did he sin or did his parents sin? Right? Why is he this way? And so already something gets going within them, the way they're conditioned to prejudge this man, to kind of see him only as a blind beggar. I mean, the social category that he gets put into. And they're caught up in it. And Jesus knows their blindness. Jesus understands how blind they are, even though they have eyes to see. And they ask him, hey, who sinned? Was it this man or was it his parents? And Jesus is like, neither this man nor his parents sinned. this isn't about sin. This isn't about the moral imposition of judgment. So in order that the glory of God may be known, we've got to get to work here. If we're going to break open this paradigm, if we're going to bust open this paradigm and do the work of God, we've got to do something here. So you got to imagine that Jesus kind of doesn't say that Jesus talked to the man. The man is just sitting there. He's not asking for healing. He doesn't know who Jesus is. He doesn't give any indication. He has a clue who Jesus is. It's just Jesus somehow strides up there, takes some mud, spits in it, right, gets it all wet and, you know, muddy, and then starts smearing it on the man's eyes. And I hope that Jesus asked for his consent ahead of time, right? Like, hey, dude, I'm about to put some mud in your eyes. Do you mind? But it doesn't say that. It's just Jesus just seems to do it. And sometimes that's how healing happens. It comes unbidden. It comes unexpected in ways that disrupt us. And yet that's how it shows up. And so here he is. He's got mud on his eyes. And Jesus says, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. And the man has a choice. He's like, okay, I could get up and go to the pool of Siloam and I could go and wash off, or I could just leave this mud on my face. And he chooses to wash it off, because of course he's going to go wash it off at this point. So he gets up, washes it off. And something happens. Right? Something happens to him that changes his world. Something happens to him that changes his whole understanding of himself. It shifts his identity in this really profound way. And he is in the world differently than he's ever been before. And so he walks back to his community, and his neighbors are like, who are you? And he's like, I'm your next door neighbor. I'm that kid that used to be blind. And they're like, what? It's like, what happened? And it's like, well, you know, this man Jesus made some mud, put on my face, made me wash it off. And they're like, what? This man Jesus made some mud and made me wash it off. And they're like, who are you? Right? They can't see him. What's curious is his neighbors can't see him. He's changed, and his neighbors, they're like, are you the guy? No, you're not the guy. You look like him, but you're not the guy. I mean, some of them are saying that. And others are like, yeah, I think it is the guy, but what happened to you? And then there's this whole thing that happens in the neighbors, and the neighbors are all talking to each other, and they're like, and so no other neighbors who weren't there, when they heard it come, and they say, what happened to you? And it gets repeated for this poor guy. I mean, this is what happens in little villages. Everybody now knows, and now everybody's there, and the poor guy's having to tell his story over and over again. He's like, well, yeah, the guy put mud on my eyes, and this is what happened. And they're like, really? And he goes to see his parents, and his parents are like, who are you? And I can't imagine, like, the joy that the mix of emotions they must feel, like the joy of, like, seeing this man who is their son, and yet he's different than he used to be in a very fundamental way, and the joy at that, and yet the history of their own heartache and the history of their own grief and their own sense of guilt, like, that doesn't seem to put away there. And so, I don't know, this is a really complicated human story. And so the town takes this man and takes him to the Pharisees and, you know, the religious leaders. And, you know, it's been helpful for me as I read these stories to kind of put myself in the shoes of the Pharisees. I said this last week, you know, you grow up as a kid and you're like, Jesus always seems to be at odds with the Pharisees, and so as a kid, you're like, yeah, Pharisees bad, and Jesus good, and I'm going to be on Jesus' side and not the Pharisees' side. And then you grow up, and you realize, actually, I'm probably more like the Pharisees than I am like a disciple, and maybe I should start reading these stories from the Pharisees' perspective, because maybe I'm a Pharisee. And when I do that, I realize the Pharisees actually, what they're concerned about is protecting the goodness of God. They're protecting the gift of God. They're concerned about the Sabbath, right? And what is the Sabbath? The Sabbath is this thing, is this gift that God gives to humans to actually take a break, to rest and relax. Like, you work all week. You do hard labor all week. You're stuck in a pattern all week. Break it up. Do something different. Take a break. take 24 hours and take a break. It's good for you. It's good for your soul. This is what the Pharisees are trying to say. And people are like, yeah, no, thank you. I like my smartphone. I want to stay glued to it 24/7. Jesus is like, no, take a Sabbath, take a break. I like work, right? So the Pharisees are trying to say, hey, God's good. There's a goodness to what God wants to give you. There's a goodness to this thing called the Sabbath. Enjoy it, right? It's time that's set aside to enjoy creation and enjoy your family, enjoy, eat good food and enjoy it. And people get stuck in their rhythms and they're like, yeah, no, thank you. I don't want to do that. It's hard being a Pharisee trying to say to people, hey, take a Sabbath. Problem with these Pharisees is in being zealous about guarding the goodness that God gives, they become rigid in the process. They become pretty dogmatic in the process, right? And so, as this often happens, when you're trying to protect something and preserve something, you become part of the problem. And the Pharisees became part of the problem here because they're really focused on sin and the nature of sin. And so they bring this, the town brings this guy to the Pharisees. I mean, his neighbors bring him, and they're like, hey, Pharisees, look at this guy. Like, and they've just been standing there with stones, wanting to throw stones at Jesus, and this guy's like, this guy Jesus. You know, they're like, what happened to you? And he's like, well, this guy Jesus came, and he put mud on my eyes, and I washed, and now I can see. And they're like, what? How'd that happen? And they're divided. They're divided. Some of them are like, you know, if he was a sinner, this couldn't happen. God wouldn't bless him. And others are like, no, he's a sinner. It's the Sabbath. He violated the Sabbath. God's not going to bless that. And so there's this argument, and they're like asking the guy. So they send for his parents, and they ask his parents, and his parents are afraid because his parents know this isn't an honest inquiry. Like, they can't honestly say, hey, this guy Jesus seems to be a good guy. Like, he did something that was amazing here. They know the Pharisees don't want to hear that, and so they don't say anything. They clamp down, they're afraid, and they say, he's of age, ask him. And so the Pharisees bring the guy back, and they're like, what happened to you? And he's like, well, this is what I know. I mean, they say, we know this man is a sinner, right? And he's like, I don't know if he's a sinner. What I know is that I used to be blind and now I can see. That's all I know. And it's curious how the story shifts. There's this fascination in the beginning of who sinned, this man or his parents? Who's the sinner here? And then it shifts to the Pharisees, where the Pharisees are saying, is Jesus a sinner? Is he not a sinner? Who's a sinner here? And that's part of the blindness of this story. There's such a focus on moral failing in this story and trying to parse out who failed morally and who didn't fail morally. And the man's like, I don't know about any of that, but what I do know is that I got healed. What I do know is that I got transformed. What I do know is that I see the world differently than I've ever seen it before. And that's what I can tell you. And they're like, you must be one of his disciples. We're disciples of Moses. And he's like, okay, all right. But that you haven't been able to actually honor or appreciate what happened here. That somehow this man changed my life. And so they kick him out. Like, we don't have anything to do with you. It's at that point that Jesus seeks him out. Again, this man doesn't have a clue about who Jesus is. Again, this man never asked to be healed, but he doesn't have a clue. And so Jesus seeks him out and finds him. And he sees Jesus for the first time. He hasn't seen Jesus up to this point. He sees Jesus. And Jesus says, do you know who the Son of Man is? And he's like, nope. Don't have a clue. The Son of Man being a reference to this vision in Daniel where you've got God on a throne and you know, the human being, one like a human being coming, and it's all about the liberation that God intends for God's people and the setting of God's people free. And Jesus says, I am he. And the man says, the man falls down. The word is he prostrates himself. He worships him, and he says, I believe. And so he's had this whole trajectory where the end stage is he says, I believe. Like, belief has not been a requirement for him in any of this up to this point. Like, and it's not even a requirement now, but it's something he falls into. It's something that happens to him. It's like he discovers it along the way. Like, in this process of being transformed, right, and entering into the world, he discovers belief. And Jesus didn't require it of him. And then this is what Jesus says. I came into this world for judgment, so that those who do not see may see, and those who do see may become blind. I think what's hard for me is that that's not how I think about judgment. I mean, we're haunted in the Christian tradition by views of judgment that have a God of wrath up there who's sorting out who's been naughty and nice, who's a sinner and who's not a sinner, and the sinners are going to go over here, and those other people are going to go over there. And that Jesus doesn't seem to be talking about that. Because judgment is saying, what the judgment is that those who don't see are given sight. And those who think they see, their blindness is revealed. That's the judgment. Which is a really curious way of understanding or thinking about judgment. That what God is up to is revealing blindness and giving sight. And some of the Pharisees near him heard this and said, surely we're not blind, are we? If we were blind, you would, and he says, if you were blind, you would not have sin. But now that you say we see, your sin remains. Which is this weird paradox. Like, if you claim you see, your sin is there, your sin is revealed, but like, if you're totally ignorant about it all and somehow your sight is restored. I feel like I'm just on the cusp of understanding this, but I don't feel like I really get it. Right? I mean, it's kind of a curious story, and it's like, oh, okay. Like, all right, I'm more inclined to be like a Pharisee who thinks I see and I understand, right? So if my tendency is to say, hey, I got this story figured out, and let me tell you what this story means, I would be such a good Pharisee. And part of the caution of this story is, oh, so you think you can see, do you understand your own blindness? Like, the very claim that you think you know what's going on, your very certitude reveals how much you really don't know and how clouded you are. But actually, if you know your blindness, I'm here to give you sight. Like, if you're aware of your own blindness, it would do nothing more to please me than to help you see.